They're called the hidden homeless. Around Wisconsin, thousands of people in rural, small towns are finding themselves down on their luck and struggling to keep shelter over their heads. And the number is growing. Nationally, the number of homeless people using suburban and rural programs rose 57% between 2007 and 2010, while the number in cities decreased by 17% during that same time period. That's according to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And that trend is matched in our state and our region. This hour, we'll talk about rural homelessness in western Wisconsin with three women who know it, see it, and work to study and battle it every day. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. And I mentioned three experts in the field of homelessness in western Wisconsin, and they are, in no particular order, Robin Thibodeau. She's the Associate Director of WestCap. That's a community action agency based in Glenwood City. Robin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Carrie Poser. She's got a long title, but I'll get through it without messing it up. Carrie Poser is the Homeless Management Information Systems Coordinator for the Northwest Region with Institute for Community Alliances. Carrie Poser, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And we've got Duana Bremer. She is the Social Services Director for the St. Croix Salvation Army and works with Grace Place, a homeless shelter in Somerset. Thank you so much for being here, Duana.
Thank you for inviting me.
Our pleasure. And it's going to be a great discussion. You guys know each other well, interact well, and have a lot of information to share. So first of all, I just want to get a definition out there, because when a person says, oh, homeless, I know what that is. Rural homeless, is that different than what people might be thinking in their head when they think of, you know, maybe someone on a park bench, Carrie Poser?
So the definition of homelessness is placed in statute by HUD and Congress. It has a complicated history, and it has a variety of different components to it. So the flat-out definition of homelessness is, number one, somebody is literally homeless when they're sleeping outside or at another place not meant for human habitation. They're sleeping in a shelter, or they're sleeping in a motel or hotel paid for by another organization or agency. You are imminently homeless, but yet still homeless, if you are about to be evicted from an apartment or a home or somebody, sister's house, whomever, and you lack the ability to secure other permanent residence within 14 days, or you're in a hotel paid for by yourself and you can't continue to pay for it after 14 days. Third definition of homelessness has to do with unaccompanied youth, we'll just go with unaccompanied youth. Mm-hmm. The fourth definition of homelessness has to do with victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, somebody that's fleeing or attempting to flee.
And this is just kind of just popped in my head. You know, you've got some very specific in statute, as you mentioned, definitions of homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Are there more definitions than that? I mean, is it more complicated than a statute can even?
Certainly. Well, there's the other issue that isn't addressed in the statute, which is the people that are couch surfing or they lack a place to live. That's traditionally people say, I'm homeless. It's that they lack a place that's their own to live. Unfortunately, the federal government does not recognize that necessarily as being the definition of homelessness. There has to be these other components to it. It doesn't mean that they don't need help. It just means, unfortunately, with tight amounts of money and dwindling amounts of money, they are focusing on those people that literally are on the street or already hit shelter. And those are the people that the money is targeted towards, not the people that actually have a place to stay. They have a roof over their head, even if it isn't their own.
Now, as far as numbers for Western Wisconsin, we've got a couple of different ways to quantify that. And what are those different measurements, those different calculations?
Sure. So one of the things I do is data related. So I serve the western side of the state, which includes the west central area, which is basically Menominee all the way to the border. And then Chippewa County, and then the Indian Head region, which is north of us, Rusk through Burnett County, and then the Western Dairyland area, which includes Eau Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ran some basic shelter numbers. Anybody that receives state or federal funding has to put their information and their data into a computer database. That's what the HMIS, Homeless Management Information System, is. And so with that, by doing that, I can then do some different kinds of report running. So I ran some numbers for 2013, so the calendar year 2013, for those areas that I referred to, just in shelter. So just in shelter by itself, there were 1,114 people served in a shelter that isn't counting domestic violence shelters in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Then I ran for 2014 from January until just June 30th. Again, doesn't count domestic violence shelters. There was 777 people served.
Hmm.
Which means if we continue at that rate, you'll be over 500 people more than was served last year.
And yet, you know, we're hearing that things are supposedly getting better. Dwana Bremer, what, at the ground level, at Grace Place in Somerset, I mean, what are you seeing as far as the need that's out there for shelter, emergency shelter?
Well, the demand continues to grow for emergency shelter needs. In fact, we have been operating a shelter for 10 years that had 24 beds. We are now expanding to 64 beds in a new facility. Reason we're doing that is because we're unable to keep up with the demand. And it's not so much that people are coming in to our community from other areas. It's our friends and neighbors. In some cases, folks that come to see us, an incident happens. They have a car breakdown. They lose a job. They can't afford to pay their rent. They get laid off. So some of the things are real basic reasons that we see people. There are other reasons, like folks that have mental health issues. And with that issue, it's primarily they've gotten sicker and sicker, and they lose everything. And then they become stable on medication, but they have nothing to come back to. So that's one incident that we're seeing a lot. We're seeing a lot of moms and dads that have mental health issues that are trying to parent their kids. So it's a wide variety of reasons that people are homeless. It could be one, like I said, one simple little thing that happens, or it could be, you know, several things that kind of lined up and happened to those folks.
And aside from, you know, the mental health issues, it sounds like in some cases it can be just like the straw that broke the camel's back, one little thing that might push a person that's been struggling to make ends meet, you know, over some kind of a tipping point.
Well, especially if it's a single mom making minimum wage with one child, it's impossible to survive. So with that income, you have one thing that happens, like a car breakdown. You can't pay your rent because you got to fix your car. Mm-hmm. You have to fix your car because you have to get to work. So it's just one little thing that could be a tipping point.
Mm.
Well, and I would say with Dwana, especially in your area, you also have one of the highest fair market rent values in this entire group that we're talking about. And with that being said, the apartments are too expensive for people to live in making minimum wage.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're talking about the fair market rent in the Somerset, River Falls area, New Richmond, and that is because of some of the spillover from the Twin Cities as far as the metro is concerned?
Absolutely. I think that is a huge factor in our high rents.
Hmm.
In Polk County, the rents are not quite so high, so it is more affordable for some of the folks. But even when St. Croix County was having the very high foreclosure rates, the issue was then folks that were being foreclosed on moved into apartments, and that allowed less apartments for folks that were at our facility.
Hmm. It's an awful cascading effect. So that's one measure. I mean, that's the shelter count. Mm-hmm. There's another measure called the homeless point in time count. And we had Carrie and Robin on this spring to talk about it. There's another count coming up. Could you explain it? Give us a recap, if you would, Robin.
Sure. The point in time count happens the end of January and the end of July every year.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin is unique in that all homeless service providers across the state do the point in time count on the same night. So Wisconsin, unlike other states, gets a true picture on that particular night of the number of homeless people, not only in shelters and transitional housing, but people that are on the street.
So if I may interrupt you, why is it important to do the one night count versus just sporadic different parts of the state at different times? I mean, what is more telling about doing it all in one night?
Well, then you're ensuring that you're not duplicating a count. So people aren't getting counted. So if every region did it at a different time, it may be that a person got counted in one county and moved over to the next county and then got counted again. So it really gives, and again, it is only a point in time. It doesn't count over the whole year. Like Carrie said, over 1,000 people were served in shelter last year. The point in time count just for our region, the West Central COC, which is seven counties, it's Barron, Chippewa, Dunn, Pepin, Pierce, Polk, and St. Croix counties, over the past couple of years has hovered around 100 people on that night. Mm-hmm. So every time we go out and count, that's about the same amount of people that we find in shelter or on the street at that point in time. We are always looking for volunteers for the point in time count. So if people are interested in helping, we go out between like midnight and 3 a.m. approximately. And you can contact your local continuum of care. Mm-hmm. And if you're wondering who that is, you can go to www.westcap.org. And way on the right side tab is the WIBOSCOC.
These acronyms are just
I know it's a whole world of acronyms.
Yeah.
But if you go to the Wisconsin Balance of State tab, you can find out who is your local COC across the state of Wisconsin. Contact that person, and they would be happy to send you in the direction of who's coordinating the point in time count.
And we can also put a link to that on our Westside Facebook page. A reminder to the listeners, we're talking about homelessness in western Wisconsin with three people who work with it every day. I'm joined in studio by Duana Bremer of the St. Croix Salvation Army, who works with Grace Place, a homeless shelter there. Carrie Poser is the Homeless Management Information Systems Coordinator for the Northwest Region with the Institute for Community Alliances. And Robin Thibodeau is Associate Director of WestCap, which is a community action agency based in Glenwood City, has branches in Menominee as well, I believe, and does a lot of work in western Wisconsin with not just homelessness, but other issues as well. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a story that you'd like to share, you can be as anonymous as you like. If you found yourself in a situation where you were considered homelessness and would like to tell us what it feels like, it likes to tell us, you know, some of the reactions you got from people, if there was any kind of stigma involved, do give us a call. If you know somebody who's been in this boat and has a success story, please give us a call as well, 800-228-5615. A lot of people find themselves in this boat, and a lot of people get help. So 800-228-5615. So if I'm in a city like Mondovi or a town like Bridge Creek, I never see anyone that I would suspect of being homeless. So where are they? Robin Thibodeau, I'll go to you.
Sure. In the smaller rural areas, you don't see people sitting on the sidewalk, meandering the street like you do in the larger cities. A lot of our homeless folks, they hang out at the libraries during the day. Or, you know, and their kids do go to school. In the summer especially, there's a lot. People sometimes park a tent in a neighbor's yard, or they go to a campground if they can. And people are more hidden in the rural area than they are, say, in Madison or even Eau Claire.
Mm-hmm. Duana, some folks will live in, we spoke before for a story that I did, they'll live in a vehicle or they'll live in a friend or a family member's camper or something. I even heard a story about a woman living in a pole barn with no heat, you know, year round, which just sounds hard to believe.
And we did have several folks coming into our shelter that had were staying in the winter in a storage locker. So that's very common in our area. And this winter was a really cold, hard winter, so it made it extremely difficult for individuals that were residing in a car, in a camper, trying to heat them with propane, trying to heat a garage space. So there were a lot of stories like that this year.
So if these folks are hidden and people aren't used to seeing them around, that's got to pose some unique challenges to people that are trying to get them services. How do you find them, Duana? I mean, or do the people come to you?
In many cases, the folks come to us. We also do receive referrals from WestCap, community social services, churches, even some of the folks that have resided at our shelter tell other people about our shelter. So the word just travels that way. I think it's a bigger, it's more of a difficulty communicating to our community that we have this problem. Because if you don't see the folks sitting on the curb, walking on the sidewalks, holding their sign that says, "I'll work for food," the community is not aware that we have this problem. You know, they're thinking it's a big city problem. It's something that happens in, you know, Minneapolis, in Madison. They don't realize it's something that happens right here in our community. And when you're even shopping in the grocery store or your kids are going to school, there may be homeless people.
Right.
And you're just not aware of it.
Carrie Poser, is this like a case of out of sight, out of mind? And if a person, you know, it seems like when people call for action, it's more like what they're really saying is they might be a little uncomfortable about what they're seeing and they want to do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea that you don't see people sleeping outside, you don't think that it's happening, and therefore either you're much more hesitant to support somebody like Duana's organization or Robin's organization in terms of the kinds of funding that they need to continue to be able to do the services that they do, because you don't see this ongoing need. I think that's a big part of two of the things that these guys do, you know, fantastically. You know, Robin's agency is about getting people housed, and Duana does a little bit of both. And the thing is they both get state and federal funding that continues to get reduced. As that continues to get reduced, and we just talked about the numbers are going up, what is going to offset that? Okay. There isn't a secret pile of money or a money tree sitting somewhere that is going to help fund these guys. And it's absolutely critical to me that the western side of Wisconsin recognizes this isn't a Twin City problem. This isn't a Madison problem. If you want to end homelessness in western Wisconsin for real, not just because you don't see it, but because you're appalled by the idea that there are kids that go hungry every night and sleep in a car or in a storage facility, then these agencies need help, and they need funding, and they need volunteers, and they need support.
Well, what about, and I was going to get into the funding a little bit later, but we can talk about it right now. What about private donations? Doesn't WestCap get any kind of private donations? And aren't you able to take, you know, these numbers that Carrie has and that you get from the point in time and say, hey, this is real, this is a real thing, or not?
We don't get a lot of private donations. We do a lot of grant writing, and we're supported by our United Ways and private foundations, and that helps supplement the state and federal funding. I think when we do an ask about homelessness, there is a stigma around homelessness. People think, well, you know, they just need to get a job, or they, you know, they just need to do something, that it's a moral issue,
right,
that they're just lazy or you know, can't make it on their own for some reason. And Duana talked earlier before about how one thing can push people over the edge, and I just want to clarify, people in this area, part of the difficulty in outreaching too is people are proud and they don't want to ask for help if they don't need to. And sometimes we get people saying, well, you know, you don't need to spend your resources on me. There's got to be somebody else that needs them that's in a worse boat than I am. And, you know, just an example that just, you know, just really touched me last year. This woman called in at 4:30, right before I was leaving for the day. And I was the last, one of the last people left in the office. And she called, and she had a 4-year-old son. And she had been kicked out of the house with her 4-year-old son and had been sleeping in a storage shed. And the only reason she was calling, she said, you know, if it was just me, I'd just stay here. I'm a waitress. I would save up enough money for security deposit. But we've been staying here for a while, and I can't even give my son a good bath. And he needs somewhere that he can just be able to take a bath. And, you know, so I, you know, I mean, I stayed until we got her situated somewhere. But, you know, just it's that really, you know, people need help. And it's not because they're this woman was working. But again, like Dawana said, you know, if you're working a minimum wage job and one thing happens, it's just, it becomes a vicious cycle. And it's really hard to get out of that. It's hard to be poor because you never have that little safety net of your own to be able to get past a struggle.
Dawana, and I might be getting a little philosophical here, but is there, you know, okay, the out of sight, out of mind thing is, that's one aspect. But what about in rural areas? You seem to have people that are much more focused on just roll up your sleeves, you know, farming. I'm thinking of agricultural communities where there people are fiercely independent and fiercely, you know, maybe conservative, maybe not, but very much into the idea that self, you know, response, you take responsibility for yourself. Do you think there is a difference between the mentality in the rural areas versus the city areas in that respect? And does that play into this whole, you know, maybe more stigma towards homelessness in rural areas than not?
Well, I think there is more stigma in this area because homeless folks aren't visible, for one thing.
Sure.
But I do think the work ethic here, you always hear, well, why can't they pull themselves up by the bootstraps? They don't have any bootstraps. You know, and most of the folks that I work with, they are very strong people. I would not be able to do some of the things that they've been able to do to survive. Saying that, I have never done an intake with anyone at our facility that they don't feel humiliated, embarrassed, that they can't, and scared that they can't support the needs that their family has. I have not talked to someone when they first come into the facility that was not fearful. And most of the folks that come in to our program either do have a part-time job in the family or are working full-time, but other events have happened and they don't have a place to live.
Mm. And what about the breakdowns? Do we have any breakdowns, Carrie or Robin, as far as, and I hope I'm not springing anything on you, families versus single adults, anything like that, or even if you've got a anecdote or something like that?
I don't have those numbers right off the top of my head.
Okay.
But we do serve more families than we serve singles in our programs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dawana has a permanent housing program that does serve more singles. Is that that's right?
More singles. And then we also have a shelter that is located up in Polk County that just serves singles. But I know one of the things that we had talked about before we went on the air is Robin was saying we're starting to see more and more single moms with one or two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really difficult to try to support your family. You know, it's like Robin said, it's not fun to be poor. Because
no.
It's really difficult when your focus is paying your rent, trying to put food on the table for your kids, and then your car breaks. You know, that's really a hardship.
Yeah. And Carrie, as far as the number of people in shelters, any sense of what kind of ratio families play in that?
To be honest, I didn't break it down that far. Okay. But what I will say, just a few weeks ago, there's a shelter in River Falls, and that shelter only serves families. And I was having a conversation with the shelter director, and she was saying, you know, it's a problem in River Falls in that they don't recognize that they have single people that are homeless because their shelter only serves families. And so where do all these single people go? Yet she is turning away single people at a pretty alarming rate. And she started to track that in our database. And while I don't have those numbers in front of me, it is a fairly ridiculous number. And where are they going? Because I don't have an answer to where they're going exactly. But I will say that oftentimes people during the point in time that don't want to be found aren't. We certainly try and engage in, and everybody's tasked with kind of trying to do these outreach or these Homeless Connect events instead of just going out and counting people that are homeless, to actually create an event. So you are asking people to come to you to be counted, and then you can offer them something in return, whether it's a meal or you have, you know, blankets or bug spray or haircuts or whatever it might be that you can offer them in return to ask them to step forward and be counted. Because until some of those pockets of people are being counted to be more accurate in the people that are sleeping outside,
sure,
I think we're going to continue to have communities saying that, you know, they only have family homelessness or they only have single homelessness or we don't have any homelessness at all.
With that, let's take our first break. We'll come right back with more of the West Side. We're talking about homelessness in rural western Wisconsin right here this hour. We've got three great guests on the program, and we can take your calls or questions. If you'd like to share a story, do so. The number is 1-800-228-5615 to get on the air and ask a question or share something with us. You can be as anonymous as you like. The number again, 800-228-5615. Joining me in studio, Robin Thibodeau is Associate Director of WestCap. Carrie Poser works with Institute for Community Alliances. And Dwana Bremer is with the St. Croix Salvation Army. We'll be right back in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio this Monday morning. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to call in, do so. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We're talking this hour about homelessness in rural western Wisconsin, rural homelessness, the hidden homeless, as they've been called. 800-228-5615. Joining us, we've got Dwana Bremer. She's the Social Services Director for the St. Croix County Salvation Army. Carrie Poser is a Homeless Management Information Systems Coordinator for the Northwest region of the Institute, or aligned with the Institute for Community Alliances. Robin Thibodeau is Associate Director of WestCap, which is a community action agency based in Glenwood City. 800-228-5615. You can also leave a question or comment on the West Side Facebook page. So before the break, we just talked about Carrie, you were talking about shelter in River Falls turning people away. Well, if a shelter in River Falls turns people away, I don't know where the next option is. So how far and how many miles are separating these shelters in this part of the state?
Well, I mean, I would say that from River Falls, your next option is really Dewanis facility in Somerset currently. Unless they can trek all the way to Menominee, I think that's really...
And we're talking 8, 10 more miles?
Yeah. The other facility for single people is in Balsam Lake.
I was going to say.
And that facility houses 18 single individuals. We're always full and always have a waiting list. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing as far as a shelter, operating a shelter, that's really discouraging is where do these people go when we have to turn them away? They have to go somewhere because they're living somewhere, but, you know, it's very sad when we have to make that decision because we are full.
And speaking of turning people away, your organization, Grace Place in Somerset, you've got some staggering numbers as far as being having to turn away people.
Staggering. Last year we tracked approximately 139 families or family units, which could be a family of one, a single person, or a family with kids that we were forced to turn away just because of lack of space. And they met the criteria to move into our shelter, but we had no space. Now that we're kind of talking about the lack of space, maybe Robin could talk a little bit about the Rapid Rehousing Program, that we can use that to expedite moving people out of our shelter so we can accommodate more needs.
Now, Rapid Rehousing Program is kind of a newer approach, is it not, Robin?
It is. HUD did a couple of pilot projects around rapid rehousing starting in 2008, and then it became a fundable item under the continuum of care funding from HUD. The theory around rapid rehousing is that people that would traditionally go into transitional housing, which is an up to 2-year program, not all homeless families or singles need that long a time to get back on their feet. So rapid rehousing was implemented to really tailor the program to the household versus making the household fit into the program. So rapid rehousing, we revisit the family situation every 3 months. So they're enrolled. They have to be literally homeless to enroll, so coming out of the shelter or from the street. We enroll them right away, no barriers. So before, with transitional housing, there was an assessment. There was, some barriers put into place, although our program at WestCap has eliminated many of those barriers as well. But so people got into housing right away. It was a much faster process getting
housing,
them out of shelter.
As in
an apartment, single family home, subsidized housing.
Okay.
And then at the front end, a lot of case management around that family to connect them to community resources, job centers, really wrap everything we can around that family right away. And then instead of making them continue with weekly visit after weekly visit, if once they're on their feet, then they don't need us, then we back off. Rapid rehousing is a much more cost-effective way to get people into housing. It's all about the housing versus giving them services that they don't necessarily need.
Sure.
So it's much more cost effective than transitional housing. And we've been able, with state money from the Division of Housing, house over 40 households this past year in rapid rehousing versus putting them into this long 2-year transitional housing program that we only have 21 slots available for.
Hmm.
So it's really helped us expand the number of households that we can get into permanent housing. And we're actually looking at moving our transitional housing money into rapid rehousing money with HUD because it's so successful. It gives the family the resources they need without being overly case managed, and it's also much more cost effective, and we can house many more people that way.
Overly case managed, does that tend to drive people, kind of push them back a little bit?
Well, if you're a family in a shelter and really you ended up there because you lost a job or you got ill and you can be getting a job again, you're enrolled in transitional housing, you're on the hook for at least a year with weekly home visits, goal planning. You have to work with this case manager every week, even if you get reemployed the second week you're in that program. You're in there for a year minimum. That's a waste of resources. When in rapid rehousing, they're there for 3 months. If they get employed in that time, which many do, they don't need us anymore. They can move on after the 3 months, and they never see us again, versus spending all this money over a whole year when really all they needed was maybe 3 to 6 months is our average.
So we're talking 40 40 families or so through this rapid rehousing, comprehensive kind of approach. But Carrie mentioned, you know, as many as 1,000 people over the last year. It sounds like there's a big gap there.
So we're only limited by the number of the resources we have.
Right.
So
And I should say one other thing, too. A lot of times when people are in shelter, they're able to do it without rapid rehousing.
Sure.
So we're assessing them as they're in our program. When they move into a possible WESCAP program, they're doing an assessment. So we can actually go through and kind of first off serve the client with the greatest need, and secondly determine what the needs actually are. Because some of them, if they've stayed, for example, up to a 90-day stay at a shelter, some of them have actually saved enough money that they can afford to pay for their security deposit and their first month's rent.
Sure.
Those that can't but still have gotten employment and really are ready to be on their own, but they just can't come up with that little bit of money on the front end. So that's why I think, too, rapid rehousing is so beneficial.
We'll go to the phones now. We've got our first call of the morning from Lilas. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. In Chippewa, Chippewa County, the city of Chippewa. Either way, you're on the air, Lilas. Thank you so much for calling. Did I get that name right?
My name, that's a fictitious name I'm using.
Well, Lilith. I appreciate that. Lilith, okay.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Well, this lady that's talking is just going on and on about everything that I've experienced in my life. I'm 67 years old, and I've never been homeless. But I had to do prostitution in order to keep my family housed.
Hmm.
I'm an alcoholic. I came from a long line of alcoholics. My father was sexually, mentally, and physically abusive. I married young. I was only through 10th grade, and I married three different abusive husbands by the time I was 30. And I worked full-time, always working full-time, minimum wage job. You can't feed your kids.
Hmm.
And so I ended up doing prostitution.
Hmm.
I was in my 40s, and my kids were growing up and graduated, and I was going to, they're from high school, and I went back to school, got my GED, I have a psychology degree from Purdue.
Oh.
And just a 4-year, you can't do anything with it. But I'm not stupid, I'm not lazy, but the only reason I was homeless was because I did prostitution. My group I was in, the welfare rights organization for a short time, we went to a women's group and spoke, and one of the women, everything this lady's saying is so right on. This is a small community. I knew one of the women there, and she said, well, Lilith, your father didn't even have a radio when you were children, and you all have TVs. You have it good. And I was so embarrassed. I couldn't tell her I didn't have a TV, and it was hard with teachers assigning children to watch TV programs, and we didn't have one. And you don't know. There's smart people out there. I got sober when I was in my 40s, and I've had 21 years of sobriety. And in just in case anyone wants to know how I did it, I went to AA. I have not had to have another drink since my first AA meeting, and I continue to go to AA. It works.
Well, Lilith, do you think there's a lack of, well, it sounds like there's a lack of sensitivity towards this kind of thing or poverty in general. What do you think that's based in? What do you think it's the out of sight, out of mind, or what?
Very much so. This women's group said, well, we don't have poor people in this town. And so, and then as a matter of fact, back then, way back in the 70s, they were putting all the poor people, ones that are living under bridges, on a bus and sending them to California. I think they still do that, like in the winter, you know? So, the HUD program, I called them one time, and they had a two-year waiting list, but they said since I was working full-time, I'd probably get a place quicker. Now, and that just really, even way back then, just ticked me off. The people that need it the most are the last to get it.
It's a heck of a story, Lilith, and thank you so much for it. What would you tell, you know, if you could, it sounds like you've already done some advocacy work, but now that you're on the air, we've got a lot of people listening, what would you tell them about, you know, the homeless, that the hidden homeless living around them?
I'd say, yes, these are a lot of mentally ill people. They need more services, not to be shoved under the rug. Not to be going, oh, poo-poo, let the somebody else take care of them or ship them off to California or do real help. Mm. This woman is talking like it's really great. They're going in and doing this home visit to say, if you know somebody next door that's working at McDonald's and raising kids, go over and say, how can I help you? Ask that person, how can I help you? Hmm. Not here I'll give you money, or here I'll cut your lawn, or whatever. You know, I mean, that's all good things, of course. But ask that person what they need. They know what they need better than anybody.
Sure.
And but this woman that's on your program talking, she sounds like she really sees what the problem is and really doing something to help. And so give time, effort. They need a place with a phone. Yes, we need cell phones. Yes, they need clothes, decent clothes, so they can go out and get their job, get mental health treatments and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
My younger daughter and I sent money to get my older daughter and her three children from California, where they were homeless, to bring them here. And they lived in my one-bedroom apartment, a three-room apartment. They were sleeping all over my floor. And the social services outfit here would not help one bit. They wouldn't give them a home. I had to throw my daughter out, and she had to. Then they'd put her up in a hotel and get her apartment. But that was insane.
Hmm.
It was, and and don't try to run people's lives. Just give them the help they need.
Well, Lilith, with that, we'll let our panelists here field that all those things that you mentioned. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate it, and congratulations on being sober for 20 years. That's amazing.
Thank you very much. It feels good. My life is much better now. Thank you very much.
Well, that's good to hear. Thanks so much for the call. Robin, that sounded like some accolades to you and also maybe to Duana. But what about a situation like that where a program, where the daughter couldn't get any help while she was living with the home? I mean, is that a real thing? I mean, I'm not questioning Lil's honesty, but is it still happening?
It is absolutely a real thing. Unfortunately, like Carrie was saying earlier, the HUD's definition of homelessness and the resources available don't go to people that are doubled up like that.
Sure.
And clearly, a one-bedroom apartment is not sufficient for that many people. And because the resources are so limited, the resources that are available are going to people that are actually in their car, in a storage shed, on the street, in a shelter that's not meant for permanent habitation. I personally believe housing should be a right, and everybody should have shelter over their head. Unfortunately, that's not how resources are allocated. So we do what we can with the resources that we have, and Lilith was absolutely right that her daughter had to move out, be considered literally homeless in a hotel paid by another agency before she could get an apartment of her own. And that is, unfortunately, how it works.
As far as shelter facilities, I mean, we talked about the rapid rehousing, but I want to talk a little bit about how many offerings there are in this region. We mentioned Grace Place. We mentioned there's an outfit in River Falls, one in Polk County. Menominee just opened up a new shelter, I believe, or they've been
they're working on it.
Eau Claire's got one, two, maybe three. I'm not positive, but other than that, I mean, is that it for our region, for our, you know, 7-12 county area?
Well, there is one in Rice Lake also.
Rice Lake.
I would say,
and in Amory.
Yep, and I would say not including the domestic violence outfits in West Central. That pretty much covers it.
Okay. So, do we need more? I mean, is there any question, do we need more? Duana, I'll go to you.
I think we need more services, not more shelters.
Okay.
More services to move people and keep people in their housing. So, before they end up homeless, you know, we need more support services, more financial help to catch people prior
right.
to getting homeless.
Right, on the front end rather than on the back end.
And I would
Carrie Poser.
I would say, to go along with what Duana said, you know, HUD has shifted gears a bit in their focus of their dollars, not into prevention, which is what Duana is kind of describing, which is to try and save people from becoming homeless, help them stay where they're at. And HUD's money is just not going that direction. They are going to the, yes, that's those people. We need to focus on the people that already are experiencing the homelessness and get them out. I agree we don't need necessarily more shelters. I do think, however, we need more housing options. And I think that affordable units, landlords that are willing to work with these programs are absolutely imperative to making this whole thing work, because if you have the money to put them in the unit but you don't have a landlord that's willing to rent to people with bad credit history, maybe bad rental history, don't have a job right now. But the whole point of these rapid rehousing programs is to help get the client in a position where they can hold their own lease, they can do their own thing, and get a job and be self-sufficient. So in my big picture, it's about affordable housing, and it's about having more landlords willing to work with these organizations.
Let's take our final break. It's a 30-second break. We'll be right back. We'll wrap up the hour with a discussion about the Grace Place's move and an expansion. We'll also talk about some of the funding issues coming down from the federal and state levels. This is the West Side. We're talking about rural homelessness in western Wisconsin. We'll be back in just a bit. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. We're rounding out the discussion this hour about rural homelessness in western Wisconsin. I'm joined by Duana Bremer, Carrie Poser, and Robin Thibodeau, all women working on the front lines of this issue right here in our region. The number to call in, well, 800-228-5615. If you can give a call and very quickly share a story, we'd appreciate it. 800-228-5615. Don't have much time left. But there was some news last month, Duana Bremer, that Grace Place was expanding quite a bit and moving locations. How many beds you got right now?
Right now we've got 24 beds, and we will have the ability to expand to 64.
64.
That will allow us the opportunity to meet the needs in the community. However, our goal also is to give people a temporary stay for a short amount of time and then get them moved into permanent housing. So that's how we're partnering with WestCap to be able to accomplish that, because clients, families, individuals are definitely much happier in their own apartment.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're grateful that we're able to give them like a stopgap for a place to stay, but that still is not permanent housing. So we'd like to see them move into more stable living. the building that we're moving into was gifted to us by Presbyterian Homes. And actually, the community of New Richmond got together, and they have raised all the additional funds we need to upgrade the facility.
Oh, really?
Which
that's,
is,
that's some news right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, which is great news. It's an older building. We have to add a sprinkler system. It was a rest home, so we need to add shower rooms. We had actually set our goal for our capital campaign of $200,000, and we're very, very close to that. So, you know, thankfully, the community has welcomed us as one of their new neighbors, so that's a very positive thing as well.
Very exciting. And we've got like a minute left, so I think that's not quite enough time to talk about the funding issues. But on average, HUD funding, state funding for homeless prevention programs, Carrie's mentioned the word dwindling before, and Robin, what's your take on it?
So our funding that comes from HUD has remained stagnant for the past, well, over a decade. So in that sense, you can call it dwindling because as fair market rents have risen, we did get a very small increase in leasing this year, but it was, you know, probably under $2,000. So that remains stagnant, and state funding has definitely been cut.
It's been cut. Has there been any, you know, we hear about, well, funding is cut for all kinds of state programs, we hear about more flexibility. And is more flexibility part of the reason why you're able to do this rapid rehousing?
Well, the rapid rehousing was a change in program, and it did add flexibility. The Department of Housing has tried to be as flexible as possible with the money that we do get, although their money does also come from federal sources, which has rules and regulations. So there's lots of rules and regulations, but we try to be as flexible as we can within that.
That's our time. Thank you all so much for the discussion. Robin Thibodeau is with WestCap. Carrie Poser is with Institute for Community Alliances. And Dwana Bremer is with the St. Croix Salvation Army. Thank you all so much. That's our time. Next week, we'll have the West Side Outside with the Outdoor Guys. So tune in then next Monday morning.